And it's a great pleasure to be over here. I'm over here for a couple of months working on my book, and I already have found a very, very interesting place, a lot of history here. And my guest this afternoon, who I know you're going to enjoy, a very incredible woman who I actually met in England. It's really interesting how these things happen, because I got the trip planned to Guatemala, and within probably 5 days of planning the trip, I suddenly started to hear about all these people, different people that had been to Guatemala or lived in Guatemala. And I was put in contact with my guest today, a wonderful lady called Lydia Trautenberg, and I went and visited her. Interestingly, she was only a few miles from me down in Sussex in the south coast of England. And I've just come back from spending an amazing weekend at her beautiful home in Antigua with our friend Penny, and was a guest there and witnessed some amazing scenes, and we had a wonderful Mayan fire ceremony on Sunday. And amazing things happen, you know. We talk a lot about manifestation, and I just wanted to share with you. We were putting out that we'd like to find somebody who was a Diksha giver. Some of you, I'm sure, have heard of this energy Diksha, which has come out of India, and it's really sweeping the planet. You know, there's people all over the world have been tuning in. Tony Robbins is a Diksha giver, and a lot of people have been tuning in. And the internet, the website, showed that there were no Diksha givers in Guatemala. So we put it out there and asked to find a Diksha giver in Guatemala. And not knowing, we were going to this fire ceremony at Lydia's property in Antigua. And the gentleman, Mayan priest, who was leading the fire ceremony, all in Spanish or local language anyway, suddenly I heard the words Diksha in India, and I could not believe it. Anyway, as it turned out, he'd been out to India in 2006, and he had done the 21-day training, and he was a Diksha giver. So, you know, I keep talking on this program about ask and you will receive. It's not just, you know, it's not just cheap words. It's true. So it's with great pleasure I invite Lydia Trautenberg as my guest today. And Lydia, it's a wonderful opportunity to have you on the show. And thank you once again for an amazing weekend. Both Penny and I were enthralled. And it's great to have you.
Oh, well, thank you very much, John. It was a great pleasure to have you and Penny over for the weekend. And yet again, I extend to you both my welcome to Guatemala. To Guatemala, I should say. I never really liked the word Guatemala. I think we ought to change that. And I think several of the Mayan shamans and Mayan people, I think, are in agreement that it doesn't do it justice to this beautiful, beautiful country and nation. But
Well, it's a great pleasure. So what I'd like to do, Lydia, if I could invite you to tell us a little bit about going way back into your sort of early spiritual life, you know, what kind of leanings you had in your home life, how you grew up, and, you know, carry on and let us know how you ended up coming to Guatemala and becoming so passionate, which you are, and I really admire. I love people who've got a lot of passion for what they do, and your passion for the Mayan history and everything Mayan is so wonderful to share. So could you let our listeners know a little bit about how you got there?
Ah, well, it's a bit of a long story, so I'll try to make it as brief as possible, but shall we say that my...
Yeah, well, we've only got less than an hour, so that'll be good.
Okay. My spiritual path, actually, I was an extremely late developer spiritually, which for many years later on afterwards worried me, until some compassionate soul reassured me, quoting the Bible, something about Jesus welcoming into his fold the last, for they shall be the first. anyway, that somehow helped ease my consciousness for a while at least. But when I arrived in Guatemala, it was not on the spiritual path. I was newly married. This was in 1977, a year after the Guatemalan earthquake. It was a huge earthquake which created a lot of destruction, of many deaths. And we had just arrived, my ex-husband, myself, to Guatemala from Spain. And I was there for about 3.5 years, after which we were transferred to Canada for 5 years, and we did the rounds of various countries, Argentina, and went back to England for 9 years. And then back to Guatemala, surprisingly, around about 1996, which was about the time when they had the signing of the peace agreement, which was a very momentous historical moment for Guatemala after 30, 36 odd years of civil war. Mm-hmm. Now, my spiritual path as such began later. It all started, actually, I think I could sort of pinpoint it to a near-death experience of mine I had in the London hospital in 1987. It sent rocketing at alarming speed through an upward tunnel, was firing multiple covered lights and explosions. I think a number of people have had this kind of experience, and so if anybody is listening in to this, they will be able to relate to it. I was then propelled into another dimension of time and space. I think this was my first spiritual teaching, really, where I had no body. I was fully conscious, and I was floating weightlessly in a space of no gravity. I was in a night sky, but surrounded by billions of bright stars around me. And these stars emanated a variety of tonal, gentle, musical sounds. I then learned there that what holds the universe together is sound. I then felt a subtle, John, but very powerful energy force dragging me away. And Sorry?
This must have been quite a shock to your system, huh?
Well, actually, it was beautiful then. It was absolutely beautiful. And because I just felt so at peace, there was wonderful peace up there. And that's where I was given a choice. My choice was to continue my journey as a soul spirit or to return back to Earth, to my physical body. Well, I chose the latter, since I'm still here.
Wow.
Why? I guess I wasn't ready. I still wanted, you know, to be with my loved ones and in a familiar surroundings. Yeah. However, when I tried to return back to my body, I found I couldn't. So I was using up there a very different type of energy. I was using a third dimensional energy, a dense one. And the mental force, which in that very subtle dimension simply didn't work. However, as up there, there is no space between thought and time and the understanding and materialization of what you think you materialize, I understood and I learned simultaneously up there the kind of subtle energy and mental power I had to use to return back to the lower dimension of Earth and the material.
Uh-huh.
So really, John, Spirit taught me a very precious lesson up there in that higher dimension. And
So what would you think, what would you say that lesson was, the basis of that lesson?
Sorry, I didn't hear that.
So what would you say that the lesson that Spirit was teaching you, what did you perceive it to be?
I think I was... I think the lesson I was being taught that this is the dimension we are to attain zero point in time and space.
Right. Did you receive any messages at this time, Lydia, about your mission working with the Maya culture?
No, nothing at all. That came much later.
Right.
Yes. That came about 11 years later.
Right. Was this the first sort of experience you had of there being another realm of reality, if you like?
Yes.
Okay.
My experience was.
Yeah.
Well, it was very, very peaceful, very beautiful. But I felt I wasn't ready.
Right.
Yeah. Now, when I returned to my body, it was quite interesting because, of course, remember, I was in a London hospital, and we're talking of 1987. Of course, things have somewhat changed since, the mentality and the awareness and the knowledge. But I was profoundly confused and alarmed because I hadn't embarked on the spiritual path then, and I had no spiritual knowledge of anything. So I asked the doctor what had happened to me, and very stony-faced, his hermetic reply was, "I think we better not discuss this." Great help. But never mind, you know. So I left it at that.
Right.
However, when I went back to Guatemala, my doctor here told me that I had physically died at least by clinical standards.
Wow, that must be quite a shocker.
It was an interesting experience, let's put it that way. But I still, you know, it's interesting because it was a wake-up call, but I didn't want to accept yet that wake-up call. And this is why we must understand why we cannot push anybody to wake up. They will do it of their own accord when they feel ready to do it.
Yeah. And, I mean, this was such a profound experience with you. At the time, you say you were married at the time. Did you share this, what your experience had been with your husband?
Yes, I was married at the time, yes.
Did you share this experience?
Did I share it with my husband? Yes. And I shared it with my mother. In fact, when I came back to my mother's house in London, they were having a cup of tea, and I just came in, and I looked a little bit sort of phased and out of sorts. And I told them about the amazing experience I'd had. My mother believed me, yes. She's had experiences, metaphysical experiences herself. She believed me.
That must have been quite a relief for you to at least have, you know, some members of your close family validate your experience rather than, so often is the case, it scares the living daylights out of a lot of people, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. No, she did believe it. She did believe it, yes, absolutely, yes. And I was, a year later, able to share this with other people who had had similar experiences, yes. However, my next calling came in Guatemala this time, and this was in 1998. Now, this was no more tunnel travel through time and space. This time, spirit sent me a very clear, sharp visions and dreams, one after the other. Saying, come on, it's time to move on. They were being now a little bit more insistent, shall we say.
Right.
the spiritual path that I was to embark on, and that I had to change course, basically.
You had to change course dramatically, yeah?
Dramatically, yes. I was being asked, in fact, to complete my marriage because it was not allowing me to move forward. And that there is absolutely no judgment there at all. You know, we go into relationships and because we have some learning to do. And once we have learned and we complete the lesson, we're ready to move on.
Absolutely. And isn't it interesting how so often when that point comes, if we don't listen and do the moving on, very often the soul, the higher self of our partner makes life more difficult for us until we listen.
Oh, absolutely. And this is precisely what happened to me.
Really?
Because I was told very, very clearly that I was needed. Of course, this is 1998. I was needed as a light worker, a healer of earth, and that I was free to choose my spiritual path as long as it was with light and in active service work with humanity and Mother Earth. I mean, at the time, John, quite frankly, I hadn't a clue what they were on about.
So well, that's interesting. So what did you do for support?
Sorry?
Well, I mean, that's interesting. I always find that interesting because when these things happen, you know, we need support. I mean, where did you get your support? What did you get your information? Where did you get your validation that everything was happening, everything that was happening, which seemed to be at the material and physical level breaking down? Where did you get the validation and the encouragement that everything was actually okay?
It just came through channeling and within me.
Right.
Channeling and...
But were you able to make contact with other people, though, who were more experienced spiritually to help you?
Yes, I was eventually. I must also add that after that, as the years, the following years, I began to receive the messages very, very clearly, prophetic messages in dreams, and it was always the same voice talking to me. And everything that this beautiful, beautiful voice and messages I've been receiving in the dreams and visions, showing me very clear pictures of what I had to do, what my path was, and also later prophetic events in the world. And these prophetic events have all materialized. For example, the war in Iraq, the collapse of the dollar. I'm just giving those examples, you know, the first things that come to my mind.
Yeah. So were you, in the end, you presumably you left your marriage?
Yes. I returned, what really then finally forced the issue that was the toughest. But there again, as you said, John, if we don't pay heed to a divine calling, and we will be put tougher and tougher obstacles. And I think that we need to listen then to these obstacles. When things get so difficult, then obviously we're just bumping our heads against a brick wall, and we need to change direction. And as I was refusing to budge, the light beings, I'm not sure they did not identify themselves, then began to, you know, come really hard upon me. And the final coup de grace was I was diagnosed in Guatemala with hepatitis C. And this was when I was donating blood to a dear friend who was dying from leukemia. And then I was diagnosed the same in the UK when I went there. And that's when my apparent secure, comfortable little world began to collapse around me. And I went to the UK. I was diagnosed yet again with hepatitis C, and even further, I was diagnosed by a Harley Street specialist with only a 30% chance of survival.
Wow, that must have been quite a shock.
Yes, that was quite a shock, I must say. That was hard to swallow, very hard to swallow. But then again, it was all part of the process, you see. And so then my marriage, with that, my marriage collapsed. My parents had died of cancer some years back. My daughter left for Brazil, and I was at the final blow. I was depleted of all financial support. So I was out really alone and in the street, and I began to hit rock bottom, which is what we need to do actually very often, to go what the Maya would call the infra world. Hello? Yes?
What do they call that? You said the Maya had a name.
They call it the infra world. Infra world, underworld.
Which means that you're hitting your bottom.
And that's where you learn your toughest lessons.
Yeah.
And this is where you also purify. You cleanse and you purify, you learn your toughest lessons. And if you learn the lessons, then you resurface completely reborn.
Yeah. And it's almost, isn't it? I think it's like the lesson is that we can't put anything before the divine and have divine calling.
Hello, sorry, John, could you repeat that? I could hardly hear you.
Yeah, what I was saying is it's almost like the lesson is that we have to acknowledge that the prime reason for being here is to find the divine and our divine calling. And that if we put anything before that, it gets very rocky.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. Yes. But interestingly enough, as a result of that, well, let me tell you that. Of course, you know, the liver specialist in Harley Street wanted me to go through all sorts of tests and everything else, and I thought, no, I'm not going to be here, you know, sort of like a guinea pig being tested out and everything else. So what I just did, I just sent him packing. I thought, I'm not going to allow anybody to touch me. And I just threw the interferon back into their faces. I said I won't have any interferon. Even said to me, no, your chances of survival even after that are not very good. So I thought, no, I should find another way. So I left. And that was that job is when I finally, when I walked out into the street, I finally, alone, found myself facing my creator. I'd, you know, pretty much, again, hit rock bottom. Feeling very alone. And no one to turn to, I was then sent an angel, a beautiful Buddhist friend. She has since passed on, bless her. And she took me to a spiritual healer down in Hove, in England, and who was another angel. And with only a 30% chance, I embarked on a healing process that lasted for 9 months. Under his care.
Wow.
And this was the miracle. This was the miracle that happened. During that process, as I faced the horrors of a messy separation process, which really actually all it did was mirror me all my past fears and challenging me, you know, to face them and to overcome them. Therefore, one world was collapsing whilst another world was opening up to me. With exciting experiences, John, very exciting experiences. I went through levitations and spontaneous flashbacks to past Mayan lives and whom I was then. And then I began to develop spiritual powers I hadn't a clue about before.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then traveling in my life in London. Sorry?
You've been studying Kabbalah, you say?
Yes. That's when Kabbalah entered. Whilst I was in this process of transformation in London, I suddenly saw on the front page of the, imagine, the Financial Times, I saw some Jewish letters advertising. I didn't know what they were advertising, but they began, it blew my mind. They began to dance in front of me, these fire letters, as I call them. They were full of energy. Full of energy, and they began to dance in front of me, and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm hallucinating. Couldn't believe this. And then I read the small caption underneath in English, and they were advertising Kabbalah lessons. So I understood the message that I had to go. These letters were alive. They were full of energy. And I understood that I had to embark on Kabbalah. So that also was another step forward because on my path, because I then met a Kabbalist astrologer from New York who did my chart, who did a lot of investigating together with a rabbi who was giving me the Kabbalah lessons, and we discovered that actually I had a Jewish lineage both for my mother and for my father, which I hadn't a clue about.
You had no idea of this at all?
Sorry?
You had no idea of this at all from your family?
No idea at all. I have been born and baptized a Catholic. Well, mind you, I left Catholicism when I was 11 because I always felt that there was something beyond a structured religion, but I didn't know then at the time what it was. And of course, what I did when I left Catholicism and a few years later, I joined the hippie movement and I just immersed myself in the whole, shall we say, philosophy of the hippie movement.
Right.
But, yeah, yes.
So you had a good time as well, Lydia.
Sorry?
So you had a good time as well.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Wonderful time, yes, absolutely, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
But,
So this, presumably, I think you were saying that because with your lineage coming from Austria as well, that obviously, yes, probably your predecessors and ancestors had to hide their Jewishness because of the political situation at the time.
Well, yes, they did. They had to hide it because there's always been so much persecution of the, you know, of the Jewish race. And this is where I find myself feeling very akin in heart with the Maya, because they've also been persecuted so much in the past, you see.
Right.
So there is a sympathy there, an empathy. Yes.
Sure.
So, they had to hide it. But, you know, one begins to look back at one's family tree, and I suddenly saw that my great-grandfather was called Abraham Trautenberg, and another member of the family, Abel Trautenberg, and so forth. And you thought, well, in those days, they wouldn't have chosen those names if there hadn't been a Jewish lineage.
Well, so then let's move on forward, because it's such an interesting passage that you did, and I'm conscious of the time. We've only got about 20 minutes left. What was the thing that got you into the Mayan, the interest in the Mayans? What, and how did it develop?
How did I start my path there? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, how did you develop this interest in the Mayan and what happened there?
Sorry, the line's not very clear, so I couldn't hear you. after I healed from the hepatitis, I returned back to Guatemala. I started the process of my divorce, got divorced. And it was as a result of actually all the dreams and messages I had received and the flashbacks to previous Mayan life.
Wow.
Okay. In... in Mexico and in Guatemala. And it all started to develop, unfold, receiving messages in very special sacred places, Mayan sacred sites like Tikal, like also Takalikabach, and so forth. I began to just go back in time. And so that was also a guidance, shall we say. And then I began to receive a lot of guidance from the Mayan ancestors. This has been recently in the past, I should say about 6 years or so, I've been receiving tremendous amount of guidance from them. And from the Mayan ancestors too, they call them abuelos, and they are in nature, very nature itself. Yes.
And were you living in Guatemala City at this time, or had you moved already to Antigua?
Shortly going back to Guatemala, I very quickly moved to Antigua and proceeded to start the first holistic center in Antigua called Aquarius.
Oh.
Very small, it was a seed. It was a seed that was sown and which from there on followed further seeds, began to be sown and develop, and now it's wonderful to see that there are many holistic centers.
Yeah, I was quite amazed actually at the amount of holistic the level of the holistic movement in Antigua, obviously much more so in Antigua than in Guatemala City. But it is quite incredible, the level of interest there in the holistic practices, isn't it?
Oh, yes, there are some in Guatemala City too, yes. But obviously, you know, Antigua has quite a different energy and vibration to Guatemala City, so it's much more conducive to having our holistic centers and so forth. That's right. It was starting that to start a seed and to let others follow on from there. So that was my
And did you start actually
also,
studying the Mayan culture at this time?
Yes, I was. I began to get involved in the Maya culture then, yes. Yes, I began to get involved with them. I think, if I may say so, they were some of my great teachers, the Mayan descendants, yes.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd like you to talk a little bit about, Lydia, is that fantastic selection of crystals in your property there, and especially the crystal skulls. Tell our listeners a little bit, if you would, about your introduction to those and what they mean and where they came from.
Ah, yes. Well, as I'm sitting here, I have a beautiful one in front of me. And she, her name is Mama Hollenbeck. And she came to me about 2 years ago. And she's a beautiful, beautiful earth healer. She's obviously ancestral, very, very old. There's quite a long story, I think. I won't go into it right now, but if people are interested, they can always go into the new website that I've just had open for me. It was a beautiful...
Hello? Hi, Lydia. You still with us? Hello, Lydia. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I think I've lost my connection there. I don't know if you can hear me or if you can still hear Lydia, but I'm sure it'll be corrected very shortly. Yeah, so we just had a little technical hitch there at the moment, but these crystal skulls that Lydia's going to talk to us about, they're amazing things. They're fully the various sizes, but there are some which are full life-size skulls. You know, the size of a human skull, and beautifully formed and very powerful. And Lydia's got a tremendous selection of these. And I know that they have a big bearing in the work she does. And for those of you who haven't been to this part of the world, it is a magical part. And you know, I'm aware that a lot of people are talking about the Mayan calendar in 2012, and Lydia's got a lot of information about what happens there. You know, because a lot of people have, mistakenly. Okay. Well, folks, sadly, we've had a hitch there, a technical hitch. I have to tell you that the weather over here at the moment is absolutely incredible. We've got thunderstorms, lightning. It's the back end of a hurricane they've had over here, and it has been quite incredible. So I'm really grateful that we've had an opportunity to at least get some of this this program out today. It is a fascinating place. It's surrounded by, you know, there are a couple of volcanoes, both active, in Antigua, and the scenery is just mind-boggling. It's the most beautiful place, and the town itself, or the city of Antigua, which used to be, of course, the capital of the Mayan city, you know, before the, I think, the Spanish influence took over, and interestingly, the Catholic churches that were built there, one of the major ones, when the volcano, the fire volcano, they call the volcano there, erupted, it virtually destroyed one of the major Catholic churches. So there's been a lot of struggles from the Mayan people, And the ceremony that we witnessed on Sunday was rather lovely because the thing about the Mayan priest, sorry, Tom.
John, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, the technical problems we're having here are a little bit troublesome at the moment. I'm not hearing anything back. So,
have you got a storm on your side, John? John, are you there?
Oh yeah, I can hear you now, Don. I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Good. John, how you doing?
Who's that?
This is Derek West Skycloud.
Oh, Derek, how are you?
Long time no
see. Well, what a lovely surprise. You've saved the day. Don's really got it sussed out there, you know. Well, great to hear you. What's going on? Have you been out to this neck of the woods before, Derek?
What, in England?
No, I'm in Guatemala, my friend.
I've got a friend who actually has a crystal skull.
Really? Well,
and
maybe you'd like to tell us a little bit more.
Had it given to him by a fellow from Mexico. I remember seeing it years back, but I thought it was just something that somebody would carve. And then I saw just recently on television they were talking about the crystal skull because of the movie Indiana Jones. I'm not sure if you've seen that documentary, but they showed they did the examination. Apparently, the government did the examination on a particular skull, and they noticed that there's no flaws in this skull, and they can't figure out how it could actually be cut to make it look so perfect.
And tell me, Jerry, when were these skulls made, and where were they made? Who made them?
Well, I myself believe that actually skulls are actually made part of the Mayan belief system, but I also feel too that there's extraterrestrial assistance from this one.
So the Mayan belief is that they are the ancestral
extraterrestrial, yeah.
I'm positive that we've actually had some assistance. My beliefs are we've had the Anunnaki that would help assist to make these skulls, and they're great. They're actually used specifically as communication pieces, but as well as it's hard to explain. I was given a crystal myself by the Anunnaki, and this one actually is a key. And I've actually, some people have actually held on to it. I don't let everybody touch it, but certain people have said they felt something from it that no one else has ever felt before.
Right.
There are certain types of crystals that are used that are not from this earth, that are made elsewhere, brought here, you know. And,
yeah.
I thought I'd just share that with you.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And you actually have some of these crystal skulls?
Not myself personally, no, but a friend of mine does. He's had this crystal. Actually, it's a smaller version of it. It's almost like it fits in the palm of your hand, but not the size of a common skull that we would have, our size of our head. It was about half that size, so I was never sure if it was actually made by someone or that it was made by other means Mayans or the means of extraterrestrials, because he himself got it from the sword into him by someone else who said they dug it up and found it in the dirt.
They were opening up
in Arizona.
Sorry, why didn't catch that, Derek?
Somebody was, like, the guy that I know was digging up some ground in Arizona, up in Sedona area. And he was actually building a house there, and he dug up from this, like, so-called, I guess somebody who was a contractor found this skull in the ground, buried in the ground. And the guy dug it up by accident and said, oh, look at this. And he's had it ever since, the guy who owns the place. He's never had any bad luck. In fact, I really strongly believe that he said he felt he was led there to go and buy this particular property, and then this particular person that helped him dig up the ground and just gave him this glass skull. He thought it was just something glass. And then he took a look at it a lot closer and he found it was where it was from. It was somebody buried it in Arizona, but he figured it was actually there for a long, long, long time because this ground was not even broken yet.
Yeah, I mean, they're fascinating pieces. I mean, absolutely fascinating. You know, beautifully smooth and very powerful. You can feel the energy from them quite incredibly.
Yeah.
And Derek, are you familiar with this? I started the program telling the listeners about the Diksha. Have you come across the Diksha yet?
I'll say it again one more time.
Yeah, have you come across this Diksha, D-W-K-S-H-A, from India, which is the one that's called the Oneness
Question? No, I haven't.
That's something well worth sweeping the world. I've never known a phenomenon, take on so fast. But they recently had a gathering. They were preparing for a gathering in southern India where this started. It first came through a young child at a school there, and they were expecting 8,000 people, and 500,000 people turned up. It virtually shut down the whole of that area of southern India. And there are oneness gatherings all over the world. I know there are some over there in Canada as well. And like I said, we had a fire ceremony with this Mayan priest on Sunday after putting out that we wanted to find somebody in Guatemala that does the oneness blessing. And lo and behold, this Mayan priest had gone over in 2006 to India and trained for the 21 days. It's a very powerful phenomenon. It's really spreading right through the world very fast.
I know they have a gathering of shamans, people that come in from different parts of the world, and they gather each year at different locations, whether it's Canada, United States, or parts of Europe, or wherever they're supposed to go. But each year they gather, and they share information about what's important regarding Earth
shifting or regarding anything that's new that needs to be shared amongst each other. But I've seen actually one a lady friend of mine actually did this video. She actually taped the program of when the Dalai Lama came into British Columbia here, and there was a whole bunch of different shamans, different healers from all across the world gathered, and they brought up, you know, like say for example, someone brought up the idea of the crystal skull because one person had talked about it. Now this is approximately about maybe 5-6 years ago or even more. I'm going back now. Because I remember we used to have little small designs of crystal skulls. People used to actually become a real, I guess you'd say a fad for about maybe 10 years ago. And no one really knew what crystal skulls meant until someone really started talking about it. And now, then it became, you know, people put it aside and everybody made a big deal about it. And then until they made the video or the movie, things started happening again. People now, everybody wants to find a crystal skull that's gone.
Yeah.
It's kind of strange.
It's really, I'm having quite a struggle here hearing you at the moment, Derek, but I know we're running up to the end of the show. First of all, I want to thank you publicly for coming in and for helping out today. It's always wonderful to hear you, and for being the person who first put me in touch with Don and this beautiful radio show. And I wish you well, and I look forward to catching up with you the next time I'm over there in Canada.
Yeah, well, say hi to your wife for me.
Yeah, I will do, and same to you. And once again, thanks very much for coming on, and I look forward to catching up. And thank you to all our listeners, and I'm sorry that we didn't get to finish off with Lydia, but I trust you all enjoyed what you heard. And if any of you would like to know more, if you Google Lydia Trautenberg, I haven't got the website details, but it's L-Y-D-I-A, Lydia, and her surname is Trautenberg. That's T-R-A-U-T-E-N-N-B-U-R-G, Trautenberg. So thank you all for listening. Thank you, Derek, and thank you, Don, for everything, and many greetings and blessings from here down in Guatemala. Thank you all. Have a great day.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.